Chapter 24 Scouting and Discoveries. Sunlight through the carved shutters, creeping across the bed, woke Matt. For a moment, he only lay there frowning. He had not reasoned out any plan for escaping from Tar Valon before sleep had overtaken him, but neither had he given up. Too much memory still lay covered with fog, but he would not give up. Two serving women came bustling with hot water and a tray heavy with food, laughing and telling him how much better he looked already, and how soon he would be back on his feet if he did what the Aes Sedai told him. He answered them curtly, trying not to sound bitter. "Let them think I mean to go along." His stomach rumbled at the smells from the tray. When they left, he tossed aside his blanket and hopped out of bed, pausing only to stuff half a slice of ham into his mouth before pouring out water to wash and shave. Staring into the mirror above the washstand, he paused in lathering his face. He did look better. His cheeks were still hollow, but not quite as hollow as they had been. The dark circles had vanished from under his eyes, which no longer seemed set so deep in his head. It was as if every bite he had eaten the night before had gone into putting meat on his bones. He even felt stronger. "At this rate," he muttered, "I will be gone before they know it." But he was still surprised when, after shaving, he sat down and consumed every scrap of ham, turnip, and pear on the tray. He was sure they expected him to climb back into bed once he had eaten, but instead he dressed. Stamping his feet to settle them in his boots, he eyed his spare clothes and decided to leave them for now. "I have to know what I'm doing first. And if I leave them..." He tucked the dice cups into his pouch. With those, he could get all the clothes he needed. Opening the door, he peeked out. More doors, paneled in pale golden wood, lined the wall, with colorful tapestries between, and a runner of blue carpet ran down the white-tiled floor. But there was no one out there, no guard. He tossed his cloak over one shoulder and hurried out. Now to find a way outside. It took some little wandering, downstairs and along corridors and across open courts, before he found what he wanted. A doorway to the outside, and he saw people before then. Serving women and white-clad novices hurrying about their chores, the novices running even harder than the servants. A handful of roughly dressed male servants carrying large chests and other heavy loads. Accepted in their banded dresses, even a few Aes Sedai. The Aes Sedai did not seem to notice him as they strode along, intent on whatever purpose, or else they gave him no more than a passing glance. His were country clothes, but well made. He did not look a vagabond, and the serving men showed that men were allowed in this part of the tower. He suspected they might take him for another servant, and that was just as well with him, so long as no one asked him to lift anything. He did feel some regret that none of the women he saw was Egwene or Nynaeve, or even Elaine. "She's a pretty one, even if she does have her nose in the air half the time. And she could tell me how to find Egwene in the Wisdom. I cannot go without saying goodbye. Light, I don't suppose one of them would turn me in, just because they are becoming Aes Sedai themselves. Burn me for a fool. They'd never do that. Anyway, I will risk it." But once out of doors, under a bright morning sky with only a few drifting white clouds, he put the women from his mind for the time. He was looking across a wide flagstoned yard with a plain stone fountain in the middle, and a barracks on the other side that was made of gray stone. It looked almost like a huge boulder among the few trees growing out of rimmed holes in the flagstones close by. Guardsmen in their shirt sleeves sat in front of the long, low building, tending weapons and armor and harness. Guardsmen were what he wanted now. He sauntered across the yard and watched the soldiers as if he had nothing better to do. As they worked, they talked and laughed among themselves, like men after the harvest. Now and again, one of them looked curiously at Matt as he strolled among them, but none challenged his right to be there. From time to time, he asked a casual question, and finally he got the answer he sought.
"Bridge guard,"
said a stocky, dark-haired man, no more than 5 years older than Matt. His words had a heavy Ilianer accent. Young he might have been, but a thin white scar crossed his left cheek, and the hands oiling his sword moved with familiarity and competence. He squinted up at Matt before returning to his task.
"I do be a bridge guard,"
and back there again this even. Why do you ask? I was just wondering what conditions were like on the other side of the river. I might as well find that out, too. Good for traveling? It can't be muddy, unless you have had more rain than I know about. Which side of the river? The guardsman asked placidly. His eyes did not lift from the oiled rag he was running along his blade. East. The east side. No mud. White cloaks. The man leaned to one side to spit, but his voice did not change. White cloaks do be poking their noses into every village for 10 miles. They have no hurt anyone yet, but them just being there do upset the folk. Fortune prick me if I do not think they wish to provoke us, for they do look as if they would attack if they could. No good for anyone who do want to travel.
What about west, then?
The same. The guardsman raised his eyes to Matt's. But you will no be crossing, lad, east or west. Your name do be Matram Cawthon, or fortune abandon me. Last night a sister herself in person did come to the bridge where I did stand guard. She did drill your features at us till each could speak them back to her. A guest, she did say, and no to be harmed, but no to be allowed out of the city either, if you must be tied hand and foot to keep you from it. His eyes narrowed. Is it that you did steal something from them? He asked doubtfully. You do not have the look of those the sisters do guest.
I didn't steal anything, Matt said indignantly. Burn me. I didn't even get a chance to work around to it easy. They must all know me. I'm no thief.
No, it is no that I do see in your face. No thievery. But you do have the look of the fellow who did try to sell me the Horn of Valir 3 days gone. So he did claim it did be, all bent and battered as it did be. Do you have a Horn of Valir to sell? Or mayhap, do it be the dragon's sword?
Matt gave a jump at the mention of the horn, but he managed to keep his voice level.
I was sick.
Others of the guardsmen were looking at him now.
Light, they'll all know I'm not supposed to leave now.
He forced a laugh.
The sisters healed me.
Some of the guardsmen frowned at him. Perhaps they thought other men should show more respect than to call the Aes Sedai sisters.
I guess the Aes Sedai don't want me to go before I have all my strength back.
He tried willing the men, all of those watching him now, to accept that.
Just a man who was healed, nothing more. No reason to trouble yourself about him any further.
The Ilioner nodded.
You do have the look of sickness in your face, too. Perhaps that do be the reason. But never did I hear of so much effort to keep one sick man in the city.
That's the reason, Matt said firmly.
They were all still looking at him.
Well, I need to be going. They said I have to take walks, lots of long walks, to build up strength, you know.
He felt their eyes following him as he left, and he scowled. He had simply meant to find out how well his description had been passed around. If only the officers among the bridge guards had had it, he might have been able to slip by. He had always been good at slipping into places unseen, and out. It was a talent you developed when your mother always suspected you were up to some mischief, and you had four sisters to tell on you.
And now I've made sure half a barracks full of guardsmen will know me. Blood and bloody ashes.
Much of the tower grounds were gardens full of trees, leatherleaf and paper bark and elms, and he soon found himself walking along a wide, twisting, graveled path. It could have led through countryside if not for the towers visible over the treetops, and the white bulk of the tower itself behind him, but pressing on him as if he carried it on his shoulders. If there were ways out of the tower grounds that were not watched, this seemed the place to find them, if they existed. A girl in novice white appeared ahead on the path, striding purposefully toward him. Wrapped in her own thoughts, she did not see him at first. When she came close enough for him to make out her big dark eyes and the way her hair was braided, he grinned suddenly. He knew this girl, memory drifting up from shrouded depths, though he would never have expected to find her here. He had never expected to see her again at all. He grinned to himself.
Good luck to balance bad.
As he remembered, she had quite an eye for the boys.
Els, he called to her,
Els Grinwell. You remember me, don't you? Matt Cawthon. A friend and I visited your father's farm. Remember? Have you decided to become Aes Sedai, then?
She stopped short, staring at him.
What are you doing up and out? She said coldly. You know about that, do you?
He moved closer to her, but she stepped back, keeping her distance. He stopped.
It's not catching. I was healed, Els.
Those large dark eyes seemed more knowing than he remembered, and not nearly so warm, but he supposed studying to be an Aes Sedai could do that.
What is the matter, Els? You look like you don't know me. I know you, she said.
Her manner was not as he remembered either. He thought she could give Elaine lessons now.
I have work to be about. Let me by.
He grimaced. The path was broad enough for six to walk abreast without crowding.
I told you it isn't catching. Let me by!
Muttering to himself, he stepped to one edge of the gravel. She went past him, along the other side, watching to make sure he did not come closer. Once by, she quickened her steps, glancing over her shoulder at him until she was out of sight around a bend.
Wanted to make sure I didn't follow her, he thought sourly. First the guardsman and now Els. My luck is not in today.
He started off again and soon heard a ferocious clatter from one side ahead, like dozens of sticks being beat together. Curious, he turned off toward it into the trees. A little way brought him to a large expanse of bare ground, the earth beaten hard, at least 50 paces across and nearly twice as long. At intervals around it, under the trees, stood wooden stands holding quarterstaffs, and practice swords made of strips of wood bound loosely together, and a few real swords and axes and spears. Spaced across the open ground, pairs of men, most stripped to the waist, flailed at each other with more practice swords. Some moved so smoothly it almost seemed they danced with one another, flowing from stance to stance, stroke to counterstroke, in continuous motion. There was nothing quickly apparent aside from skill to mark them from the others, but Matt was sure he was watching warders. Those who did not move so smoothly were all younger, each pair under the watchful eyes of an older man who seemed to radiate a dangerous grace even standing still.
Warders and students, Matt decided.
He was not the only audience. Not 10 paces from him, half a dozen women with ageless Aes Sedai faces and as many more in the banded white dresses of the accepted stood watching one pair of students, bare to the waist and slick with sweat, under the guidance of a warder, shaped much like a block of stone. The warder used a short-stemmed pipe in one hand, trailing tobacco smoke, to direct his pupils. Sitting down cross-legged under a leather leaf, Matt rooted 3 large pebbles out of the ground and began to juggle them idly. He did not feel weak exactly, but it was good to sit. If there was a way out of the tower grounds, it would not go away while he took a short rest. Before he had been there 5 minutes, he knew who it was the Aes Sedai and accepted were watching. One of the blocky warder's pupils was a tall, lithe young man who moved like a cat.
And almost as pretty as a girl, Matt thought wryly.
Every woman was staring at the tall fellow with sparkling eyes, even the Aes Sedai. The tall man handled his practice sword almost as deftly as the warder's, now and then earning an approving, gravelly comment from his teacher. It was not that his opponent, a youth more Matt's age with red-gold hair, was unskilled. Far from it, as much as Matt could see, though he had never claimed to know anything about swords. The golden-haired man met every lightning attack, turning it away before the bound strips could strike him, and even launched an occasional attack of his own. But the handsome fellow countered those attacks and flowed back into his zone in the space of a heartbeat. Matt shifted the pebbles to one hand but kept them spinning in the air. He did not think he would care to face either of them, certainly not with a sword.
Break!
The warder's voice sounded like rocks emptying out of a bucket. Chests heaved, the 2 men let their practice swords fall to their sides. Sweat matted their hair.
You can rest till I finish my pipe. But rest fast. I'm almost in the duttle.
Now that they had stopped dancing about, Matt got a good look at the youth with the red-gold hair and let the pebbles drop.
Burn me. I'll bet my whole purse that's Elaine's brother. And the other one's Galad, or I'll eat my boots.
On the journey from Toman Head, it had seemed half of Elaine's conversation had been of Gawain's virtues and Galad's vices. Oh, Gawain had some vices, according to Elaine, but they were small. To Matt, they sounded like the sort of things no one but a sister would consider vices at all. As for Galad, once Elaine was pinned down, he sounded like what every mother said she wanted her son to be. Matt did not think he wanted to spend much time in Galad's company. Egwene blushed whenever Galad was mentioned, though she seemed to think no one noticed. A ripple seemed to pass through the watching women when Gawain and Galad stopped, and they appeared on the point of stepping forward almost as one. But Gawain caught sight of Matt, said something quietly to Galad, and the two of them walked by the women. The Aes Sedai and Accepted turned to follow with their eyes. Matt scrambled to his feet as the pair approached.
"You are Matt Cawthon, are you not?" Gawain said with a grin. "I was sure I recognized you from Egwene's description, and Elaine's. I understand you are sick. Are you better now?"
"I'm fine," Matt said. He wondered if he was supposed to call Gawain my lord, or something of the sort. He had refused to call Elaine my lady, not that she had demanded it, actually, and he decided he would not do her brother better.
"Did you come to the practice yard to learn the sword?" Galad asked.
Matt shook his head. "I was only out walking. I don't know much about swords. I think I'll put my trust in a good bow or a good quarterstaff. I know how to use those."
"If you spend much time around Nynaeve," Galad said, "you'll need bow, quarterstaff, and sword to protect yourself. And I don't know whether that would be enough."
Gawain looked at him wonderingly.
"Galad, you just very nearly made a joke."
"I do have a sense of humor, Gawain," Galad said with a frown. "You only think I do not because I do not care to mock people."
With a shake of his head, Gawain turned back to Matt.
"You should learn something of the sword. Everyone can do with that sort of knowledge these days. Your friend, Randall Thor, carried a most unusual sword. What do you hear of him?"
"I haven't seen Rand in a long time," Matt said quickly.
Just for a moment, when he had mentioned Rand, Gawain's look had gained intensity.
"Light, does he know about Rand?" "He couldn't.
If he did, he'd be denouncing me for a dark friend just for being Rand's friend. But he knows something."
"Swords aren't the be-all and end-all, you know. I could do fairly well against either of you, I think, if you had a sword and I had my quarterstaff."
Gawain's cough was obviously meant to swallow a laugh. Much too politely, he said,
"You must be very good."
Galad's face was frankly disbelieving.
Perhaps it was that they both clearly thought he was making a wild boast. Perhaps it was because he had mishandled questioning the guardsmen. Perhaps it was because Els, who had such an eye for the boys, wanted nothing to do with him, and all those women were staring at Galad like cats watching a jug of cream. Aes Sedai and Accepted or not, they were still women. All these explanations ran through Matt's head, but he rejected them angrily, especially the last. He was going to do it because it would be fun, and it might earn some coin. His luck would not even have to be back. "I will wager," he said, "2 silver marks to 2 from each of you that I can beat both of you at once, just the way I said. You can't have fairer odds than that. There are 2 of you and 1 of me, so 2-1 are fair odds."
He almost laughed aloud at the consternation on their faces.
"Matt," Gawain said, "there's no need to make wagers. You have been sick. Perhaps we will try this sometime when you are stronger."
"It would be far from a fair wager," Galad said. "I'll not take your wager now or later.
You are from the same village as Egwene, are you not? I would not have her angry with me."
"What does she have to do with it? Thump me once with one of your swords, and I will hand over a silver mark to each of you. If I thump you till you quit, you will give me 2 each. Don't you think you can do it?"
"This is ridiculous," Galad said. "You would have no chance against 1 trained swordsman, let alone 2. I'll not take such advantage."
"Do you think that?"
asked a gravel voice. The blocky warder joined them, thick black eyebrows pulled down in a scowl.
"You think you 2 are good enough with your swords to take a boy with a stick?"
"It would not be fair, Hamar Gaidin," Galad said.
"He has been sick," Gawain added. "There is no need for this.
To the yard,
Hamar grated, with a jerk of his head back over his shoulder. Galad and Gawain gave Matt regretful looks, then obeyed. The warder eyed Matt up and down doubtfully.
Are you sure you're up to this, lad? Now I take a close look at you, you ought to be in a sick bed.
I'm already out of one, Matt said, and I'm up to it. I have to be. I don't want to lose my two marks.
Hamar's heavy brows rose in surprise.
You mean to hold to that wager, lad?
I need the money, Matt laughed.
His laughter cut off abruptly as he turned toward the nearest stand that held quarterstaffs, and his knees almost buckled. He stiffened them so quickly he thought anyone who noticed would think he had just stumbled. At the stand, he took his time choosing out a staff, nearly 2 inches thick and almost a foot taller than he was.
I have to win this. I opened my fool mouth, and now I have to win. I can't afford to lose those two marks. Without those to build on, it will take forever to win the money I need.
When he turned back, the quarterstaff in both hands before him, Gawain and Galad were already waiting out where they had been practicing.
I have to win.
Luck, he muttered. Time to toss the dice.
Hamar gave him an odd look.
You speak the old tongue, lad.
Matt stared back at him for a moment, not speaking. He felt cold to the stone. With an effort, he made his feet start out onto the practice yard.
Remember the wager, he said loudly. 2 silver marks from each of you against 2 from me.
A buzz rose from the accepted as they realized what was happening. The Aes Sedai watched in silence, disapproving silence. Gawain and Galad split apart, one to either side of him, keeping their distance, neither with his sword more than half raised.
No wager, Gawain said. There's no wager.
At the same time, Galad said,
I'll not take your money like this.
I mean to take yours, Matt said. Done, Hamar roared. If they have not the nerve to cover your wager, lad, I'll pay the score myself.
Very well, Gawain said. If you insist on it, done.
Galad hesitated a moment more before growling,
Done, then. Let us put an end to this farce.
The moment's warning was all Matt needed. As Galad rushed at him, he slid his hands along the quarterstaff and pivoted. The end of the staff thudded into the tall man's ribs, bringing a grunt and a stumble. Matt let the staff bounce off Galad and spun, carrying it around just as Gawain came within range. The staff dipped, darted under Gawain's practice sword, and clipped his ankle out from under him. As Gawain fell, Matt completed the spin in time to catch Galad across his upraised wrist, sending his practice sword flying. As if his wrist did not pain him at all, Galad threw himself into a smooth, rolling dive and came up with his sword in both hands. Ignoring him for the moment, Matt half-turned, twisting his wrists to whip the length of the staff back beside him. Gawain, just starting to rise, took the blow on the side of the head with a loud thump, only partly softened by the padding of hair. He went down in a heap. Matt was only vaguely aware of an Aes Sedai rushing out to tend Elaine's fallen brother.
I hope he's all right. He should be. I've hit myself harder than that, falling off a fence.
He still had Galad to deal with, and from the way Galad was poised in the balls of his feet, sword raised precisely, he had begun to take Matt seriously. Matt's legs chose that moment to tremble.
Light, I can't weaken now.
But he could feel it creeping back in, the wobbly feeling, the hunger as if he had not eaten for days.
If I wait for him to come to me, I'll fall on my face.
It was hard to keep his knees straight as he started forward.
Luck stay with me.
From the first blow, he knew that luck or skill or whatever had brought him this far was still there. Galad managed to turn that one with a sharp clack, and the next, and the next, and the next, but strain stiffened his face. That smooth swordsman, almost as good as the warders, fought with every ounce of his skill to keep Matt's staff from him. He did not attack. It was all he could do to defend. He moved continually to the side, trying not to be forced back, and Matt pressed him, staff a blur. And Galad stepped back again, wooden blade a thin shield against the quarterstaff. Hunger gnawed at Matt as if he had swallowed weasels. Sweat rolled down into his eyes, and his strength began to fade as if it leached out with the sweat.
Not yet. I can't fall yet. I have to win. Now!
With a roar, he threw all his reserves into one last surge. The quarterstaff flickered past Galad's sword and in quick succession struck knee, wrist, and ribs, and finally thrust into Galad's stomach like a spear. With a groan, Galad folded over, fighting not to fall. The staff quivered in Matt's hands, on the point of a final crushing thrust to the throat. Galad sank to the ground. Matt almost dropped the quarterstaff when he realized what he had been about to do. Win, not kill. Light, what was I thinking? Reflexively, he grounded the butt of the staff, and as soon as he did, he had to clutch at it to hold himself erect. Hunger hollowed him like a knife reaming marrow from a bone. Suddenly he realized that not only the Aes Sedai and Accepted were watching. All practice, all learning had stopped. Warders and students alike stood watching him. Hamar moved to stand beside Galad, still groaning on the ground and trying to push himself up. The warder raised his voice to shout,
"Who was the greatest blade master of all time?"
From the throats of dozens of students came a massed bellow.
"Jerome, Gaidin."
"Yes," Hamar shouted, turning to make sure all heard. "During his lifetime, Jerome fought over 10,000 times in battle and single combat. He was defeated once by a farmer with a quarterstaff. Remember that. Remember what you just saw."
He lowered his eyes to Galad and lowered his voice as well.
"If you cannot get up by now, lad, it is finished."
He raised a hand, and the Aes Sedai and Accepted rushed to surround Galad. Matt slid down the staff to his knees. None of the Aes Sedai even glanced his way. One of the Accepted did, a plump girl he might have liked to ask for a dance if she were not going to be an Aes Sedai. She frowned at him, sniffed, and turned back to peering at what the Aes Sedai were doing around Galad. Gawain was on his feet, Matt noted with relief. He pulled himself up as Gawain came over. "Mustn't let them know. I'll never get out of here if they decide to nurse me from sunup to sunup." Blood darkened the red-gold hair on the side of Gawain's head, but there was neither cut nor bruise apparent. He pushed two silver marks into Matt's hand with a dry, "I think I will listen next time." He noticed Matt's glance, touched his head. "They healed it, but it was not bad. Elaine has given me worse more than once." "You are good with that."
"Not as good as my Da. He's won the quarterstaff at Beltane every year as long as I can remember, except once or twice when Rand's Da did."
That interested look came back into Gawain's eyes, and Matt wished he had never mentioned Tam Ol Thor. The Aes Sedai and the Accepted were all still clustered around Galad.
I must have hurt him badly. I did not mean to do that."
Gawain glanced that way. There was nothing to be seen but two rings of women's backs, Accepted's white dresses making the outer ring as they peered over the shoulders of crouching Aes Sedai, and laughed.
"You did not kill him. I heard him groaning. So he should be on his feet by now. But they are not going to let this chance pass. Now they have their hands on him. Light, four of them are green, Aja."
Matt gave him a confused look.
"Green, Aja?
What does that have to do with anything?" And Gawain shook his head.
"It doesn't matter. Just rest assured that the worst Galad has to worry about is finding himself watered to a green Aes Sedai before his head clears."
He laughed.
"No, they would not do that. But I will wager you those two marks of mine in your hand that some of them wish they could."
"Not your marks," Matt said, shoving them in his coat pocket. "Mine." The explanation had made little sense to him, except that Galad was well. All he knew of what passed between Warders and Aes Sedai were the pieces he remembered of Lan and Moraine, and there was nothing there like what Gawain seemed to be suggesting.
"Do you think they'd mind if I collected my wager from him?"
"They very likely would,"
Hamar said dryly as he joined them.
"You are not very popular with those particular Aes Sedai right now."
He snorted.
"You'd think even green Aes Sedai would be better than girls just loose from their mother's apron strings. He isn't that good-looking."
"He is not," Matt agreed. Gawain grinned at both of them until Hamar glared at him.
"Here," the warder said, pushing two more silver coins into Matt's hand. "I will collect from Galad later. Where are you from, lad?"
Manetherin.
Matt froze when he heard the name come out of his mouth.
I mean, I'm from the Two Rivers. I've heard too many old stories.
They just looked at him without saying anything.
I think I will go back and see if I can find something to eat.
Not even the mid-morning bell had rung yet, but they nodded as if it made sense. He kept the quarterstaff, no one had told him to put it back, and walked slowly until the trees hid him from the practice yard. When they did, he leaned on the staff as though it were the only thing holding him up. He was not sure it was not. He thought that if he parted his coat, he could see a hole where his stomach should have been, a hole growing larger as it pulled the rest of him in. But he hardly thought of hunger. He kept hearing voices in his head.
"You speak the old tongue, lad?"
"Manetherin."
It made him shiver.
"Light, help me. I keep digging myself deeper. I have to get out of here, but how?"
He hobbled back toward the tower proper like an old, old man.